Warning: The Mended Futures podcast contains stories told by guests that may be sensitive to some people. Viewer and listener discretion is advised. The opinions expressed by guests do not reflect the views of the hosts and/or producers of this podcast.
We just finished a conversation with two employees from Humankind, another nonprofit organization in the region, who's experienced a rebrand, a change in services over their history.
Yeah, a lot of parallels between them and 518, which is very cool.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we got to hear from Grayson and Chloe about the programs and services at Humankind and also their heart for working with the nonprofit.
Yeah. It's kind of hard to sort of put them into words because we really just had like the best time with them. So we really hope you enjoy.
Having Humankind here is a big deal because there are a lot of parallels when we're in the Vision 30 space and the child welfare space. There's a lot of parallels between 518 as an organization, Humankind as an organization. There's been a renaming, rebranding, evolving how services are offered. And I think that's affirming when you see another organization that has changed over time in a similar way. So welcome.
Thank you.
So if you want to start just by introducing yourselves and telling us a little bit about Humankind and what you do for them.
You want to start? Sure. I'm Grayson. I'm the recruiting and training manager at Humankind, specifically for treatment foster care. And as far as our program goes within Humankind, we basically create a contracted network of foster families that can serve DSS across the state of Virginia. Because DSS is divided up into individual localities. So we have a Lynchburg office, but it's going to serve Campbell County, Lynchburg, Appomattox. And so I get the privilege of working with any foster parents coming into Humankind. I am the first person they talk to. I go through an interview process with them prior to them even starting the home study. So I've been doing this for about 5 years. And so any new families, I've always been their kind of buddy to walk them through this process.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah. So that's who you are professionally. Who are you in other ways?
That's a great question. I am rounding out my 20s. And so I just had a birthday this past week, 29.
Happy birthday.
Nice.
Yeah. And I think that a big part of my 20s has been try everything. Just even if it's something that I've never done before, even if it like I don't know anybody at the event, just show up. And
I love that.
So it's been a little bit of everything. I'm going to Puerto Rico this weekend.
Cool.
So I'm very excited about that. So
have you been on a podcast before?
I was on one for my church.
Yes.
And we were talking about emotional health and spirituality. So that was
some light topics.
Yeah.
Very comfortable.
Very
easy.
I was sitting there with my papers like, and you must know yourself. Amen.
Amen.
So I've known Chloe her entire life. I met you yesterday, which I think is really interesting that I didn't know you and heard you speak on a panel. And now we get to sit together in a little bit more of an intimate conversational setting.
Yeah.
And you said something yesterday on a panel about foster care awareness, foster care in general, that was kind of mic drop. So I want you to say it again. And it has to do with what you just said about your 20s. What did your mom tell you?
Oh, yes. I use that all the time. So my mom's told me that with decisions, we often have to try them on like clothes to see how they fit us. And so we don't really fully understand how something is going to be until we experience it, mm-hmm. and that it's 100% okay to try something and then be like, oh, wow, this did not feel on me how I expected it to be. And to feel the complete freedom to be like, nope, don't want to do this anymore. Mm-hmm. Because you hold yourself back from so many experiences like fostering, which is a major commitment and complete lifestyle change, because you're so afraid of, I guess, letting people down. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
So yesterday, I'm sitting in the audience as a 40-something, and now I hear that you're 29, and I love the concept of reverse mentoring. There are so many things that we can learn from people who are younger than us. And you said that, and I thought, I'm going to say that to other people, and I'm going to credit you, but I needed to hear that as well.
Yeah, you know, you're in sort of a transitional period.
Too. Yeah, but that is so comforting. I like calling everything a pilot, or calling it interim, because then you're giving yourself permission to fail, or you're giving yourself permission to pivot. Yeah. But when you said try it on like clothes, this is the dressing room, and if you don't want it, it's okay to put it back. You don't have to buy everything.
Yeah.
So thank you for that.
Of course, it's been a guiding thing through figuring out who I am.
Yes.
And
do you remember how old you were when she told you that?
I think the first time I really got it was in my early 20s. Mm-hmm. My mom had a lot of, you know, little one-liners that she said when I was a kid.
But, oh, same.
You know, when you're seven, and she's like,
I don't
decisions
know
are
mean.
Like clothes.
Life is like a box of chocolate.
Where are the fruit snacks?
Right, exactly. So it really hit me in my 20s because I was very much like the analysis paralysis type. Mm-hmm. I was so afraid of people thinking I was flippantly making decisions that I
feel
would,
that.
Yeah. So the freedom of just being like, oh, well, I'm not going to live in that prison anymore.
I can try that.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So, Chloe, who are you at Humankind and out in the wild?
Yeah. So I am the volunteer and community relations specialist. I am on the communications team, so I get to do a lot of marketing, but also get to do a lot of community engagement. Cool. So that's kind of why Allison and I started meeting, really to see how can Humankind be involved with the community more, because we all have the same goal to help, but how can we do that with more partners? Mm-hmm. So Humankind is a nonprofit that is all around Virginia, and our goal is to meet clients where they are, see what do they define as a success for themselves? And then let's walk alongside them and see how can we provide the resources and services to them so that we can break those barriers. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of different services that we do. One is foster care. We also have sponsored homes, which Allison got to learn a little bit more about, which is for individuals that have intellectual disabilities. We also have a free childcare, and it's not just a Head Start center, but also get to meet the families and say, hey, what do you need as a family while that child is in that care? As well as we have financial literacy opportunities and ways to work, which is a low interest car loan. That also teaches them how to maintain a car loan, but also how to maintain that car because they're also not taught how to do that.
Removing barriers around transportation.
Yeah.
And I feel like us being at the Vision 30 gathering on the day before we record this podcast, someone brought up how transportation is a barrier even in the foster care space. And I thought, do they know that there are multiple nonprofits in this region around the state that help remove barriers? Yeah. So I think we're getting better at talking about how we can help each other, but there's still a long way to go.
And that's why those events exist, so that we can, hey, how can we help you get over this barrier?
Right.
But then we also do parenting education. So we do a lot, but it's really how can we help that individual and that family as a whole? Outside of work, I am a creative, so I like to do anything with my hands. I love to sew and upcycle. And I really just love to get to know people and know their story and see how I can just listen and help them and serve them. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's interesting that you're a volunteer coordinator, or I don't know your title, but volunteer related because you volunteer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you volunteer for the organizations that you hope to partner with in the future. So I know that about you.
Mm-hmm. Where does that how can I serve mindset come from? Where did that kind of start for you?
I think I went through some tough things through my childhood. And I think you have the decision to either make, you can either be a victim your whole life or you can use that as your purpose. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to be a victim my whole life. I want to be able to help those people that also are going through the same thing. Or maybe it's something, you know, not just in my childhood, from every season of my life, mm-hmm. you always learn something. And I want to be able to help them and just listen to them and be there to support.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Grayson, what do you look for when you're interviewing and recruiting potential foster parents?
So I love that this question is being asked as I've had more experience. Mm-hmm. Because this past year, it's definitely evolved. And first off, I look for like a flexible personality. Mm-hmm. Somebody that is able to go with the flow and is able to, in multiple seasons, change their lifestyle. Mm-hmm. That flexibility, because if somebody's going to do this long term, they have to understand that they're going to live probably 20 different lives in 5 years. Mm-hmm. Because every time a new member of your family enters your household, it's going to be a completely different dynamic. And so as far as, you know, my rock star families, that's who I'm like, you will be successful in this. The people that we ask, how is your schedule going to change when you get a foster child? And they're like, well, not at all. We're going to implement a structured structure in our structured home. And I'm like,
yeah, right.
Okay. We have a little ways to go. So I think having that flexibility about life, not being like super tight gripped on it. Mm-hmm. I also look for somebody who has an empowered mindset when it comes to children. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of people that will come in that are very concerned and they're scared. And like, I mean, I get it. But there's people that come in and they're like, if anyone would be able to help this child, it would be me, mm-hmm. you know, because I am the adult and they're the child. And my role of having authority is not to be the authoritarian. It's to be able to be empowered and figure out any obstacle mm-hmm. that this child is going through. And so I love when I'm talking on the phone and we'll talk about severe behaviors, right? So I'll be like, so what if this child wants to run away all the time? Or what if they struggle with self-harm? Or, you know, what if they've gotten a bunch of fights at school? And they're like, well, I think we'll be able to figure it out. Like, we could put locks on the tops of the front door, or mm-hmm. we could put door chimes places. Mm-hmm. And they're very much like, let's figure this out mm-hmm. for a child that they've never even met, you know? Yeah. And that's the people that I'm like, oh,
okay,
you are going to change the whole dynamic for this kid.
Mm. Yeah.
So they could be terrible at paperwork and be late to my interview 5 times.
Right.
But if I can see those qualities, I'm like, we can work with the rest of this stuff. Because
so I'm the person who sits in the chair and thinks about all the things and who might be listening, and people outside of this region might even be listening. And someone may have just heard that and thought, I could do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so thank you for having an answer and having a specific answer. Yeah. And I'm a Clifton Strengths coach, which is a specific type of assessment from Gallup. And someone
like a personality test?
Kind of, or like your strengths in life. And someone this week said, what are your Clifton Strengths? And so I said,
thank you for asking. Well, no,
it was just such a strange, it's a person that has sat on the couch.
Oh.
And she said, what are your Clifton Strengths? And I said, how do you know that? Why haven't we talked about this before? What are yours? Mm-hmm. Her number one is adaptability.
Oh, that's a great word.
I love that.
She leads out a foster care ministry and is an adoptive mother. And so when you just said flexibility, I immediately went to adaptability. And you can screen for that, or you can, and showing someone that that is their strength, because a lot of what you just described, those people seem, and I'm one of those people, so I say this affectionately, we seem like we live in the gray, or sometimes we're flightier, or we're not organized. I love change. This other person loves change. And you just talked about, you know, there's a type that can kind of go with the flow. So that was cool to hear you explain it.
Well, and I think one of the really beautiful things about that too is a lot of the black and white type A people in many of our industrialized spaces in general, they're the ones that are put on this pedestal of like, you
you're so together, right?
And I'm like, that's not gonna work in this foster care space, you know. And I have people that come in who have the heart for it, but then my job as the recruiter is to push all their buttons up front to see if we can get you to a place where your heart, I say to people all the time, I'm the flight attendant on the plane asking if you're willing and able, right? There's a lot of you that are willing and not necessarily able yet. And if you're teachable, we can get you to able by the end of the process, you know? And so I'm not saying if somebody's like black and white type A, like they can't do fostering, but you're going to have to be willing to be molded a little bit to get there.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
I love that.
The way that
visual.
I'm processing that is like, people like you, people who love change, who don't love the, you know, every minute of my day is the same every single day. It's, you have the freedom, like the ability within your schedule to put priority before structure.
Yes.
So you're able to choose what you need to prioritize day to day.
Yes. And so when you think about it in a strengths-based situation, like in that context, it's 1 to 34. So you have top strengths and then the bottom is 34. Deliberate and consistent are my last two. So not only am I not good at that, I also don't like it. So there are some people that thrive when things are new and different. And so I appreciate that you're able to say that as a foster care recruiter. And it seems like that's crazy that you would turn down foster families right now. Do you ever feel like, how could I say no to a family, or how could I push back to a family because they're so needed? Is that a balance thing? Because when we drive around town and wherever anybody's listening, what do you always see about foster care?
That we need families. But I think that okay, so this is the way I see very like macro on things, right?
Me too.
And so when you funnel someone into a system against your better judgment, knowing you're probably not going to last because this just doesn't work with your personality, you're feeding into the problem, because that one disgruntled voice is now going to go out and be like, oh, fostering is terrible. It's a horrible thing. And I just hated it. And it's like, no. The nature of foster care just didn't vibe with the nature of your personality.
You tried it on and it didn't fit.
Exactly. Ooh. Right.
And I just keep thinking, so I'm like how you described your mother. I have one-liners. Once you know better, you do better. So I think hearing you talk about foster care and the willing versus the able, the will and the skill matrix, now we understand because we've been doing foster care as a system for long enough that there is a type, or there are some skills that will help you. And if you do that, or if you find people, it's going to be a better fit, because putting vulnerable kids in situations that you don't think are going to work is a perpetual broken cycle.
Well, and it's more trauma.
Yes.
You know, because I have done this long enough now to see when there's that person that I'm just like, oh, my heart goes out to you because you want to do this so bad. And then we put them through and they have a placement for 6 hours and they're like, oh, I can't do this. I can't do this. Close my license right now and take this child back. And it's like, oh, okay.
That's one more trauma.
Yeah. And the child's like, what did I do wrong?
Right.
Nothing.
Yeah. Literally nothing.
The adults in the room didn't handle this because we were too afraid of hurting someone's feelings.
Mm-hmm. I really liked hearing so many things yesterday about foster care from people around mm-hmm. the region. And we've talked to folks who have sat on the exact same couch that were foster parents who needed respite so badly. Mm-hmm. And they were saying, you know, the thing that we wish that our village would have done is provided respite or come over mm-hmm. on a night where we couldn't take all of the children mm-hmm. out to a chorus concert. Or, you know, I think there's so many people listening mm-hmm. who think, I might want to try that on. I might want to try that. Mm-hmm. And I could try it for a weekend or I could try it for, and you know up front that the child is coming to you temporarily. So you've prepared your heart, you've prepared your mind.
Yeah. If it's chaos, it's 3 days of chaos.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It's like you can do anything for 3 days. You'll mm-hmm. make it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
And at the end of the day, that's exactly what we needed you for. So at the end, mm-hmm. you don't have to feel like a failure.
Right.
Yeah. Because mm-hmm. it's like, we only needed you for 3 days anyway. So right. if mm-hmm. you come out of it and you're like, oh, yeah, this isn't really for me. Well, thank you for serving the purpose that you did. Yeah. And that was a success in and of itself. Mm-hmm. You mm-hmm. figured out about yourself. The child had a safe place. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So tell the people who are listening who have a heart or think they might have a heart for this, if they just heard you describe respite, what do they do if they think, I could do that? Mm-hmm. Where do they go? Who do they call?
Well, me.
Okay.
Hey. Yeah. Definitely. As far as like the approval process for it, we have a very streamlined process. So my other wonder twin in mm-hmm. all of this, me and Eric, started around the same time 5 years ago. And we've created this very well-oiled machine. So our approval process only takes 2 months. Mm-hmm. I start out with everybody. As you can tell, I take this very seriously. So I do an application that's pretty simple and interview process before they start the home study. Because mm-hmm. the home study is a lot of paperwork, visits to their home, trauma-informed parenting. So I do a little preliminary vetting up front to make sure we're all feeling good. And then they go into this 2-month process of getting approved. The great thing is we approve all of our families with a full license. So if they do respite and they're like, wow, I really like this, I really think I could do this long term, they already have a full license. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. they can just transition straight into long-term care, their next placement.
Cool. So. Nice. And so for people listening, when you said it's a really streamlined process, it only takes 2 months, there are probably some folks out there like, what?
Yeah.
Whenever you work with minors, there are going to be so many layers of protection. So folks who are listening, you know, the child is mm-hmm. the client and the child's safety is paramount. Mm-hmm. So,
well, and it takes 2 months for me to get to know you all enough for me to put one of my kids with you.
Right.
You know,
right.
Absolutely.
Because we can sit here and do a bunch of paperwork, but you can write whatever you want on paperwork.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, mm-hmm. one of the things that I've really leaned into in this fifth year of this job is if I get a gut feeling about you, like if I wouldn't have my godkids stay with you,
mm-hmm.
Nope.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't get gut feelings off paperwork.
Mm-hmm.
I need to spend time with you. I need mm-hmm. to get to know you. And also that 2-month process is really, it's not just about getting someone licensed. It's about fully preparing them because it's a, like, spiritual process, for lack of a better term.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're going through this process of preparing themselves mentally, preparing their home. And so they might be
preparing
like, that sounds
heart.
Long. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it's, you're going to be changing your whole lifestyle, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, right. Totally.
So.
Yeah.
518 talks about meaningful relationships and the fact that everyday people, ordinary people, can make a big difference in the community. Mm-hmm. And over 2 months, you are forming a meaningful relationship with the people who are mm-hmm. willing to step in the river and help a child, but really you're helping a family.
Yeah.
So I think that's huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Chloe, switching gears a little bit, because people are listening around the region and beyond, and they're probably like, Humankind, what is that?
Yeah.
Tell the people a little bit of the history. So what did it used to be? What did the services used to look like? How are there some similarities between 518 and Humankind? Tell some of that story.
Yeah. Anyone who's listening that's from Lynchburg knows us as the Prez Home. Beautiful campus. We used to house a lot of children there. Started with 5 children.
Was the Presbyterian Orphanage.
Yes, it was an orphanage. And that's, children were living there until the early 2000s, which is crazy to think about. And then we had group homes for our adult services. And then we kind of had to evolve to what does the community actually need now? Mm-hmm. And the community doesn't necessarily need an orphanage right now.
Right.
And a lot of, things change with policies and all of that, too. So
once you know better, you do better. So there are so many parallels.
I didn't know that. That's very cool.
And I'm a former history teacher, so this is your history lesson. And if you need to speed it up, don't skip it. But if you need to speed it up, But over 100 years ago, there was a need for an orphanage.
Yeah.
And they used the word orphan.
Yep.
The founder of... or the founders of Patrick Henry also knew that there was a need for an orphanage.
Yeah.
And then we start using different words. Mm-hmm. Now the word orphan is coming back into the vocabulary because it's biblical to talk about widows and orphans.
Yeah.
When you hear of Mr. Day, the CEO of 518 Family Services, he talks about his orphan spirit. There's so many parallels that you would have housed hundreds on a huge campus location that is stately and beautiful. Yeah. And there was a farm.
Yep.
Yeah.
Patrick Henry was on Patrick Henry Founding Fathers land.
Red Hill. Yep.
Living in cottages, on the Prez home. Mm-hmm. So, so many similarities. And 20, 25 years ago, people are saying, wait a minute.
Yeah.
You know, when we know about research and we know about families, the move more towards fostering and kinship.
Yes.
And I love the similarities because I think it's affirming when you see, okay, we're kind of walking out in similar ways.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's more of a mental health component to the 518 ministries.
Yeah.
There's more of a financial literacy, a financial piece at Humankind. And your spread across the state is a little bit different.
Yeah.
But I think it's neat. A lot of people listening are probably thinking, wow, they should be rivals.
Yeah.
But I love that the spirit of 2025 is we're collaborators.
Yes.
We're working together. So I think that's really cool.
Yeah. Well, so, if we're rivals, then how do we help the community fully?
I think that's absolutely.
We don't do the same things. 518 and Humankind doesn't do the same things, but for one client, if we came together for that one client, we could wrap around them fully.
Yes.
Right.
And you are referral partners.
Yes.
And I think that is so neat. When we heard, sometimes transportation is a barrier to foster care. Humankind has ways to work.
I
think it's so neat that in this space right now that people are saying, how could we help you? You know, you have this training or you have this process. So I love that people are coming together and sitting at similar tables.
So to bring it a little bit back to,
I went way off.
You're good. You went history teacher and it was awesome.
Yeah.
So Chloe, you're a little bit newer in your role. You said you started in October. We're filming this in April.
Yes.
So what have you sort of gleaned and learned so far about, working with volunteers, the sort of personality of the community, and what do you look for in potential partners?
Yeah. So as far as volunteers go, I've been working with volunteers for a few years now. And I think the biggest thing that I try to teach is and promote when I'm talking about volunteers, if you come and volunteer with Grayson and you're doing backpacks, you're not just putting stuff in a backpack. Like, that backpack is going to these foster children who usually show up with a trash bag of their stuff or nothing. It's a lot more meaningful than just shoving stuff in a backpack. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so easy that that can get lost of, oh, I'm just doing this, or I'm just writing a letter to a donor to say thank you. But also writing that letter might help them feel more in touch with mm-hmm. us. That helps provide more care right. for foster care. And then as far as community partners go, if we, and I continue to say it because I say it every single day, if we are not showing up, and also, like Allison said, I'm a volunteer. If I'm not going and volunteering with these partners, why would I expect for us to call them and them just be like, oh, yeah, we'll give you whatever you need? Like, no, I want to be there to support you as a whole.
Mm-hmm. Modeling it, walking the walk.
Yeah, you have to, because that's not a partner.
Mm-hmm. Hey friends, let's talk about real impact. Imagine a single mom struggling to keep her family together or a child sleeping on the floor because they don't have a bed. Now imagine you being able to meet that need. That's exactly what happens every day through Care Portal.
Care Portal is a platform that connects real-time needs from local children and families to people like you, churches and individuals who want to make a difference. With just a few clicks, you can step in, meet a need, and build a meaningful connection that changes lives.
This isn't just charity. It's the church and the community coming together, showing up in love and action. So if you're ready to turn compassion into action, visit careportal.org and see how you can be a part of the movement, because connection changes everything.
Visit careportal.org for more information on how to sign up and start meeting the needs of children and families in your own zip code. Once again, that's careportal.org.
Thank you, Care Portal, for sponsoring the Mended Futures podcast. So, Humankind is known for an event in town.
Yes.
Maybe a couple of events.
Yeah.
So, when Humankind does something, they don't just do it on a small scale.
Yeah.
So, can you talk a little bit about the big event that people know about? And then, Grayson, you've got to talk a little bit about the number at your most recent event.
Yeah.
So I'm putting you on the spot.
Yeah. So we host the Lynchburg Turkey Trot.
Fun.
Yes. Last year we had 3,950 participants.
Wow.
We are the third in the state and top 30 in the United States.
Wow.
So on Thanksgiving Day.
Yes.
Almost 4,000 people come out and run a road race in Lynchburg, Virginia, which is called the Hill City.
Yes.
For a reason.
Yep.
And then they go home.
Yep.
And stuff themselves.
Yes.
Have to.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think we were five participants behind Arlington, which is crazy for Lynchburg.
Mm-hmm.
And it was rainy. So if we wouldn't have had rain on Thanksgiving Day, we probably would have hit number two.
Okay.
Our volunteers increased by 52%. So we had 200 plus volunteers that show up on Thanksgiving morning.
Wow.
Which is crazy. But I mean, they're gone by 10:30 and go fix your feast afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Or don't.
Yeah.
Because I was volunteering to help families around the state, and then someone else can cook.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I did a good thing, so you cook for me.
Now.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. All right. You all are welcome to use that excuse, listeners, if you hear that.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that there are tiers to volunteering.
Mm-hmm.
You can dip your toe in.
Yes.
If you want to dip your toe into the space, go for a couple hours on Thanksgiving morning.
Yep.
Go pack some backpacks. We're not asking everyone to, foster a child for a year. You don't have to jump in the deep end.
Yep.
Some people absolutely want to jump in the deep end, but there are ways that you can show up and volunteer for a morning or behind the scenes. So I hope that you all listening realize that if you're passionate about an organization, you could do something like fold papers that go in envelopes.
Yep.
Or you could go on an afternoon. It doesn't mean that it's going to be something incredibly overwhelming.
Yeah. And you have to try it on, just like Grayson said.
Yes.
I mean, every organization's different, and maybe you're not being called to volunteer or be a part of that organization. But events are the easiest way to get involved because it's low pressure.
Yeah.
There's hundreds of other people there.
Or sign up and run.
Yeah.
So that's another way.
Or sign up and don't run. We even have that option.
I love that.
Yeah. That's awesome. We have literally a premeditated no-show option.
That's amazing.
Just donate
that's just
money.
Actually awesome.
And I love, okay, so people, we're kind of brainstorming some awesome things to do.
Yeah.
And you get the shirt. So no one knows. How is anyone going to know that you didn't
athletic.
Yeah. That's actually so smart because it feels like almost like
I did my part.
You get people to donate and then they feel like I can also cancel a plan. Like that's so cool.
Way to go.
It's or like
you
a treat.
Could do it. Yeah, you could do it on your own time. I love that. I love that. Yeah. Way to go, humankind. All right, Grayson, talk about the thing that just happened.
So we have an annual Easter egg hunt for our Bedford office. And every year we have been recycling the eggs. So this past weekend, we had 25,000 eggs.
What?
25,000.
And I hope Liam zooms into Taylor's face for
I can't like think of 25,000.
Yeah. And honestly, let's just be for real. We haven't counted them, so it's at least 25,000. Right. I have no idea how many eggs were out there, but the kids, we had two separate egg hunts, one for like below five and then everyone above five. Mm-hmm. And each egg hunt, they got all the eggs up in 10 minutes.
What?
So parents out there whose children won't clean their rooms.
Right.
Yeah.
They've tricked us.
They have.
It's a scam.
It is.
They can pick these eggs up very quickly. So who's the audience for the egg hunt? I mean, anybody can run the turkey trot. Who can come to the egg hunt?
So we actually have sponsors who sponsor the event. So it's 100% free to the public and anyone can come.
Okay.
So,
amazing.
Yeah. I'm pretty positive it's the largest egg hunt in the Central Virginia area. I've been scoping them out. I've been like,
we need like
I think we got this one.
I think we like Guinness Book of World. We need some Guinness Book of World records here. Like, what's the largest turkey trot and egg, and the egg hunt. Wow.
Yeah.
So you do have some forward facing events for folks, but if you try to find humankind, I've lived in this region my entire life, and part of my history and one of the reasons why I think I have a heart for this space is my grandfather was an orphan and lived at the Presbyterian home when his mother died in childbirth. And I've heard about the Presbyterian home, now Humankind, my entire life.
Yeah.
And up until a few weeks ago, I'd never been there. Yeah. And I tried to get there, and I couldn't get there.
Right. 100%.
You all are tucked in a beautiful part of this region with a huge campus. Can you tell the people what's on your campus and why they might even want to or need to come there?
Yeah, we have a garden that I think it's Master Gardeners. They come and you can rent out a plot. So if you love to garden and grow plants, we also have a lot of trails and they're beautiful. Goes to some beautiful pines. And we also have disc golf out there. We have a basketball court. We only ask if you bring a dog, please keep the dog on a leash.
And Pick up the poop.
Yes, please.
Yeah. Okay. Very important. Because I go out there on my break and I would just derail my whole day. I have to go back in and work. And if I have the shoes.
Yeah. But if you need a space to come and read a book or really do anything, a lot of people come out there and do family pictures. It's just, that's it's so a beautiful space.
Is it open to the public? Do they have to check in? Do they have to, like, what are the rules?
The only time you have to check in is if we have a fishing pond. So we just ask that you come into the front desk and get a permit. It's free. But otherwise, it's free to come
on. That's amazing.
Yeah. Come join us.
Cool. So one of the things that I love about the work that we do in the community is there's a philosophy or a spirit of go-giving. Yeah. And 518 reads a book and studies a book and talks about a book called Being a Go-Giver. And you oftentimes hear, she's a real go-getter or he's a real go-getter.
Yeah.
But go-giving is what you just described. Yeah. You know, come on our property, use our use our facilities. And I remember during COVID, people were so thankful to mm-hmm. come to Humankind mm-hmm. and use the resources, because you all, during a really isolating time, yeah. opened up your land and your facility.
Yeah.
And I think it's so neat to see how something has been repurposed. Like yeah. your garden had to have been a working farm.
Yeah.
Because you had to have that to feed the hundreds of children yes. who were living there.
Yep.
And now I love to see things come full circle and see yeah. how you're using that. There used to be yeah. a farm or a barn at Patrick Henry, mm-hmm. and now that's being repurposed and it's a university equestrian center.
So. Wow.
Yes.
There you go. Yeah. It's 160 acres. So it's.
Is that it?
Yeah. Okay. It's a lot of land.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So,
and what's it close to for people who live around here and they're like, how do you get to it? What is it?
Yeah. If you go near Virginia Baptist Hospital, it's right on BES Road. Do not go Linden Ave. Always say that, or you will end up at the gate like Allison did.
And the gate does not open.
No, it does not.
It is not easy to do the 5-point turn in whatever vehicle you're trying to drive
no.
to get there.
Yeah.
Yes. Hence, not type A, does not follow directions in the email invite.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So I stalked you guys on LinkedIn.
Okay.
In the best sort of way.
Yeah. In a complimentary sort of way.
Yeah.
And Chloe, I think on yours, you mentioned that you're passionate about driving people from awareness to action.
Yes.
Oh.
So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. I mean, just like we talked about, like it's trying it on. Everyone has heard of Humankind most of the time in Lynchburg.
No, they haven't.
In our area. But you don't know how to get involved. And so my easiest way, if someone says, well, what does Humankind do? How do I get involved? Come and volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
Message me. And let's just see where your heart is. We have a volunteer who she does social media. She helps us with social media. She does photography. She'll also come and help Grayson and with the backpacks. I want to use your skills. I want to use what you were given and your purpose in life to be able to help others.
How about stuffing Easter eggs?
Yes.
Right.
25,000.
That part.
Right.
It's yeah. that part. That's the one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a whole month for our program manager
yeah.
out there.
And
I'm like, Ashley, next year we're getting like a egg party going.
Yeah.
Yes.
Seriously.
Yeah. Load up yeah, those eggs.
If you get 25,000 volunteers, everyone's just got to do one
there
egg.
You go.
Right. And then get on out.
And I do think it's important to realize that's something that civic groups could do, student groups
yes.
could do. If you need service hours for something,
mm-hmm.
you can't all be foster parents
yes.
without being vetted.
Yeah.
But you could stuff Easter eggs.
Yeah. And I think one thing that's really important, too, is sometimes there's a disconnect in volunteers' heads between how does this egg translate to helping a foster family.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a trunk or treat last fall for the first time on our beautiful mm-hmm. campus mm-hmm. because we were like, we need to utilize this campus for
yes.
events, you know? And we had almost 1,000 people come out for the trunk or treat.
Wow.
It was beautiful. We had a little wagon ride with the tractor.
Oh, yeah.
And afterwards, we experienced such a boom in qualified foster parents coming mm-hmm. to us
wow.
because they then have this positive association. They feel mm-hmm. like they belong there because
right,
they weren't
yes.
able to come to campus.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, how does decorating a trunk
mm-hmm.
help a foster family? Well, you're giving people an opportunity to come into the space and
mm-hmm.
feel like, oh, mm-hmm. I could belong here,
yeah.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that people can, for events, can be like, how does this really
yeah, yeah.
impact?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like, it's giving us awareness to get the right people in the building.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
that's cool.
Yeah. And I mean, I've seen volunteers come for requirements. So for school
mm-hmm.
hours that they need or for community service mm-hmm. court ordered things.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that's okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I have seen one of my favorite volunteers. She came for court ordered and she had never volunteered anywhere before, and after her time was done, she still continued to come every
cool.
single week because we were family.
Wow.
And we'll go and get food together mm-hmm. and everything else. But
belonging.
Yes.
Yeah. Volunteers want belonging.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think we are born to crave community. That might look different for everyone. But I know, especially when I got into nonprofit, it changed my life to have a community. It was exactly what I needed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think volunteering is not the only way, but it is a easy way to just try it out and see if mm-hmm. that's where you fit.
I keep thinking of a story, and one of the senior leaders from 518 shared it a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. It's the story about the custodian at NASA. And someone said, "What do you do here?" Mm-hmm. And his answer was, "We put people on the moon."
I put people on the moon.
Right. And he's the custodian.
Right.
Yeah. And so when I think about what you're sharing, if everyone knows the mission,
yes.
if everyone knows the goal,
yeah.
then we can say, I stuffed this egg, or I volunteered here by writing letters or the backpacks or volunteering at the turkey trot, but I made a family stronger,
yeah,
or I kept kids safe. If we had that sort of similar, we put people on the moon, sort of idea, then it would make sense. Yeah. It's powerful.
It's the same thing as everyone says, you know, open a door and you never know. Open a door for someone, you never know what that's going to do. It's the exact same thing.
Right.
You have no idea what you showing up to an event to volunteer is going to do, truly.
For you.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love the, I think I'm coming out to help someone else, but really it is, I think you have to get closer to the mess to see the miracles.
Yeah.
Come into the space. Come into the vulnerable space.
Yeah, then you see why it's worth it.
And you might experience things that you never would have experienced.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Chloe, you just shared a story of hope about the volunteer. Yeah. Grayson, what's a story you can share that would remind you of why you do what you do?
I think, first off, I really have the benefit in my job of there's not really a week that goes by where I don't see why I do what I do.
Yeah.
Because in treatment foster care, so if you kind of understand how this space works, we're getting contracted to take any children that DSS is not able to place.
So and the harder to place.
Yeah.
Is that what treatment means?
Yeah. And I think that depending on the size of the DSS, they might just not have the capacity. So it doesn't necessarily mean that every child getting referred to us has high behavioral needs.
Mm-hmm.
But the high behavioral needs children would definitely be coming to us, right?
Or and teenagers.
Teenagers, sibling groups. It's interesting. Teenagers get a really bad rap. But to me, sometimes I'm like, they're more of the lower behaviors because, I mean, at the end of the day, people are always like, oh, I want a baby. And I'm like, babies can't dress themselves. Babies can't feed themselves.
Babies
like,
never sleep.
Yeah.
Or mine didn't.
Right. And teenagers, you know, they sleep all the time. They're like, I'm going to my room. I'll see you later.
Yeah. Right.
So we do get the worst of the worst situations. When you're looking at crime reports on the news, most of the time there's children somehow attached to that, and they're not going to be mentioned in those articles
because they can't be.
Right.
Yeah.
But they're the ones that are coming to us, right? So when you see a domestic violence situation where mom gets murdered, where are those kids going? They're coming to us, you know? And so, I mean, a lot of people ask me all the time, how do you do what you do? Because I see kids coming out of sex trafficking. I see kids whose, you know, family member just got murdered. And so
no one goes into foster care because something good has happened to them. And I think that's very important to understand. And when they aren't placed, oftentimes they're in a facility like a group home.
Yep.
So when you see teenagers in a group home, they're not always there because of their behaviors.
Right.
They could be there because there is no other place for them.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so every day that I pour my heart into recruiting someone and developing them to be a safe space for a child, and I know that I don't know what that person will be facing at the end of this as far as what referrals they're going to be offered to take. But I remember last year, I was going through the licensing process with a family. Eric had gone out for their last visit. And as Eric and Lauren were walking off the step, they got a referral for three teenage girls that had just been removed from a sex trafficking affiliated situation in Lynchburg. And I think a lot of people
interstate. You think a big city.
Right.
You think.
Right. No, this was a hotel locally. And she literally turned back around, knocked on their door and said, "Hey, I know this isn't anything what we talked about in your home study. I know that you specifically said you want elementary age boys because of what's already working in your home.
But would you take three girls?"
Yeah. Would you take three teenage girls who also this situation is high profile? So you're basically like, this is like our mini form of witness protection for the next few weeks, right? And they look at her and they're like, well, we only have two beds set up, so we'll go to Walmart. You go get the girls.
Wow. That gives me chills.
Yeah.
I would have had to say, can I call you back?
No, like immediately.
Wow.
But we'll figure it out. And the room that they were going to stay in was a little bit smaller. And there was some physical disabilities, so we needed accessibility. And we get there and they're like, so we were thinking maybe we'll move the girls into the master bedroom and we'll move all of our stuff into the foster kids' rooms because it's just not enough space for them. And we're
talk about flexibility, adaptability.
Right. And I'm sitting there just like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Like,
do you cry regularly?
I'm a very easy crier.
Same.
And in that
moment. Happy and sad tears? Like, yeah. do you
yeah,
cry
about anything?
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, this
you
cookie.
You dropped your ice cream. Yes. 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 What I needed. I've cried because I love my room before.
Right. Yes.
So I'm sitting there and like at work, you kind of have to, you don't know how your emotions are going to affect other people, especially kids in that are terrified for their life. Mm. And so I'm sitting there keeping it together and I get back to the car afterwards and I just get in the car and I'm like crying and I call Lauren. I'm like, what just happened? Like what? There was so many of like witnessing like the worst things you've ever seen in your life. But then on the other side, seeing the most awesome people in the whole world.
Miracles.
You know?
Angels.
Yes.
Miracles.
Literally. And I'm, so that's one that I see that stuff all the time in my
job.
Amazing.
It's very cool. So as we're listening to you, and I just got chills listening to that story. So many of us are not willing or able or comfortable, all the things, to foster. We may not be willing to say yes to that.
Right.
But as I'm sitting across the room from you right now and people are listening right now, how could we help you? How could we help DSS workers? How could we help? How can we help the helpers when you're experiencing something that is so trauma filled and secondary trauma is real?
Yeah.
What do you all need?
And that goes professionally, personally, like however you want to answer to.
I remember last year during Social Worker Appreciation Month, somebody sent me a little social work appreciation gift and it was like a plastic thing that I could reusable thing that I could put my lunch in. And it was the first time somebody had said like, thank you for being a social worker because my title is recruiting and training manager. So a lot of times I don't get notices being in social work because I'm always like, I'm working marketing. So somebody gave it to me and then somebody else texted me and was like, hey, I really appreciate what you do. You're changing lives. Like, thank you for happy Social Worker Appreciation Month. And I was like, wow, like that actually meant a lot to me. So I think just saying thank you. And I think another part of it is, I mean, going back into volunteering, like when I ask for help, doing the thing I asked for help for, you know, because if you can't do the thing that I do every day when I need help with stuffing eggs or signing up for a trunk, it's not just to waste your time. It's because this is something that I need. And so if you can't do these hard things, which some people don't have the emotional capacity for, do this thing that I'm asking you to do. Mm-hmm. So
I always like for our listeners to think, you know, I think about things in seasons. So in this season, I may not be as much in the river as I used to be, but there are things that all of us can do. It doesn't cost any money to pray for someone. Mm. It doesn't cost any money to text someone and say, I know the job that you do is really emotional or really hard. Or, you know, sometimes I get a text where people are like, you're on my heart today. Mm. You know, that stuff is free. That stuff is so fleeting.
Yeah.
But it makes a big difference for people. So if you're thinking around, you know, if you're looking around or you're thinking about the people in your village, reach out to them and say specifically, you know, not good job, but say, I really appreciate how you, and then fill in the blank.
Yeah.
Because we can all do that. We can all pray for the people that we care about, or we can all lift them up a little bit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you may not be willing or able to do some of the other things.
Yeah.
And I love how volunteering is just the entry into some of this work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What about you, Chloe?
Yeah, I think back to, I mean, even foster care, like there needs to be more education out there. Mm-hmm. Grayson and I had met a while ago, and I did not realize that there are parents who come to Grayson because they want an alternate for adoption, because they are not able to. And they're like, I want this baby to look this exact way, and I want this. To me, I think it's more education of, no, that's not actually what foster care is. Maybe that's not a good fit for you. And maybe more awareness of, you know, humankind, volunteering, all of these different things, how we can partner together. That's my goal here, is to make connections and also just educate people more of what as humankind can we do for the community.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's so important. Like, I laughed a little while ago when you said everybody knows what humankind is. No, they don't.
Yeah.
As much as you all have said it over however long you've been doing this, and 518, same thing.
Yeah.
You've probably said the rebrand a thousand different ways.
Yeah.
There are still people that you have to say Presbyterian home or Pres home. That's humankind. This is what we do.
Mm-hmm.
So even if it's as simple as, you know, I heard a podcast about humankind, or I was at a lunch and learned, they do some really neat things. Or do you know the turkey trot? That benefits.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so even just having conversations around, you know, what is the organization doing?
Mm-hmm.
How have things evolved?
Yeah. Yeah. Because, I mean, most people in Lynchburg not necessarily know the name Humankind, but they know us in some form. They might even know, like, a foster parent
who
works through Humankind. Most of the time, there's going to be some kind of connection, but it's more of getting the word out.
So I'm sitting in a room with women who are all in their 20s, I assume. Right?
Yes.
Okay.
I am confirmed to be 29.
Yes, you said that. So I think that it is really important to acknowledge and also affirm younger generations in professional settings.
Yeah.
And younger generations who are choosing nonprofits. You are choosing to be helpers. What do you wish that the older generation knew about you professionally, or knew about why you're choosing this space? Because I do think that that is really interesting. I love generational things. I love history. You know, the alphas are coming into the workforce this year. And what can younger generations teach others?
I think first off, I'm not going to be motivated by tenure or staying in one place for a long time. I'm motivated by purpose, and I'm motivated by
you're
innovation. Yes. I'm motivated by innovation. I'm motivated by consistently evolving as humanity. And so there is a previous generation that's very motivated by like, I have committed to this place and I'm going to stay at this place. And I'm like, well, this ship might be going down and I won't be going down with it.
Right.
And so when it comes to my work, I will ride something till the wheels fall off as long as we are trying to be better and we're trying to be open and we're always love-centered for people. But as soon as it becomes about the money, as soon as it becomes about ego, I'm out. And I think that's where a lot of times I've been misunderstood by other generations because they're just like, you guys are so uncommitted. And I'm like,
give us a reason to commit.
Exactly. Yeah. You're committed to the mission.
Yes.
You're committed to who you're serving. And again, I'm asking this off the cuff. And if, you know, if it doesn't make the cut, that's fine. But I think it's interesting. It's pretty obvious that you all are young professionals. And I think there's something to be said about how many young professionals are choosing the Vision 30 helping space. How about you?
Ditto to everything Grayson said.
No, you can't do that.
I mean, but it is true. I think a lot of older generations, they get caught up in idolizing their workplace. And at the end of the day, it would be awful to have to transition every 5 seconds, but if that's what I'm being called to do, then I'm willing to do it because I want to serve people. And if I am being called to do something else, I can't serve the people in front of me the best way. But also, I think in my short period of my career, I have been put down a lot because, oh, you're young, you don't have experience with it. But also, most of the time, they don't know my background. They don't know the reasoning why I'm sitting here talking about these things are the reason that I have a passion. So I think it's meeting someone and being like, hey, well, what is your passion? Why are you doing this? Not, oh, well, you don't know enough. So we're just not going to even talk about that.
Totally. Yeah.
How about you?
I think mine more has to do with personality stuff. I would say that I'm a deeply casual person and I'm very frustrated by formality.
I don't think I have ever heard anyone say I'm deeply casual.
I am a deeply casual person.
How have we been sitting here for an entire
setting, I have to be like, hey, everyone, how are you doing? And it feels so formal sometimes. And I'm just like, that's why I'm so frustrated by like intros and conclusions. I'm just like, I want to be in the middle all the time.
Okay, so tell me more about this deeply casual.
So I think a lot of people in younger generations have that same sort of like, it's important to have good culture around you wherever you are. And I think that if I could say anything to people of older generations in the workforce, like me cracking jokes and like wanting people to be comfortable in no way reflects my ability to do my job. Like, I'm a very capable person, but I am deeply casual. Like, I will act like I have no idea what I'm doing because, frankly, that's more fun. But when it comes to actually doing my work, like, I do a good job.
And I'm taking it very seriously.
Exactly.
Ooh, I love that. And I just asked that. I asked that for a personal reason, too, because we're thinking about, you know, boomers are leaving the workforce. You know, you're always thinking about hiring and retaining. And I think younger generations are intentionally choosing to work in these advocate roles or activist roles, intentionally choosing ministries. So I always want to know, like, what's your heart? Because I do know, you know, it's trendy to listen and not judge, but who really listens without judging? And I know that people, even my, think about me, my age, like, what do you know about such and such? You know, you haven't lived long enough to know. So I think it's important to think about what are our biases towards younger employees or younger helpers.
Thanks for asking.
You're welcome.
What do you want younger generations to know about you?
Why did you have to ask me that?
Because you asked a good question and I wanted to be part of it.
I think that younger generations probably need to understand you know, there's a reason why the older generation acts the way they do, or almost shows, like when I think about, I'm a really confident person. One of the things that will stop me in my tracks is if I don't know whatever the technology is. So that side of reverse mentoring is so interesting to me. Like, help me do the thing. Like, help me use the app. Help me understand. I have always worked with and around teenagers. So I think I am typically up on language or slang or, but it's a totally different, it's almost like being bilingual when you're talking about working with, talking with younger generations. And I love that, but it can be scary when you don't even understand what people are talking about. And I loved that about Claudia with younger generations. She always wanted to know from employees here, like, what does that mean?
She sat right there and looked up the origins of the word slay.
Slay, yes.
Oh.
What else? What did you say? What would I want people to know
about you?
Or about my generation?
Can I tell you something?
Sure.
Some of the people who, like, are younger that work here, they're like, I was so intimidated by Allison because she's so smart and cool and capable. But then you get to meet her and it's like, she's so cool in a nice way. Like,
yeah. Or she's so not.
No, like, she's so approachable, you know? Yeah. I think you balance those two things very well.
Yeah, I would just say don't be intimidated by people's title, or don't be intimidated by, I worked for someone who was so, so wise, who would say in meetings, you know, leave your title at the door. And that is so, so cool. When, don't be afraid to speak up. Don't be afraid to take up space. Don't be afraid to say to someone older. And I try to model this or offer it. I know people in this community, and if you want to know them, come with me.
Yeah.
Or we'll go together. So I think it is important to ask for help. And when we're helpers, we don't ask for help. And my generation of people, we bragged about, I don't take sick days, or I don't take days off, or I don't do this. Like, maybe do that.
Balance.
So
I like that.
We went way off course, so we can edit,
but it's good.
Edit any of that, but I thought, as the audience is listening, they're probably like, these are three young professional women talking to one middle-aged woman, and oftentimes we're going to be in meetings where everyone is older than us.
I think even an example of what we were talking about as far as our age goes, this morning you said something about my outfit. This morning I changed at least three times because my boyfriend was over and he looked at me and he's like, why do you keep changing? And I was like, because I am constantly looked at as the youngest person at the table and I need to show up and dress differently. And he's like, but that's not your personality.
Right.
Ooh.
I think that's something that I have struggled with in my professional career. But then I also encourage younger people to show up and show their personality.
Right.
So it's something that I think we have to work on, but it comes down to judging, just like you said. And I recently had someone also tell me that if you are at the table, then you deserve to be there and you have a voice. And I think that's really important to remember.
That's good.
Yeah. Well, thank you for indulging in my generational talk.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Same.
Yes.
Cool. This was great.
So fun. Yes.
Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you for having us.
Yes.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to the Mended Futures podcast, hosted by Allison Jordan and Taylor Melvin, produced by Liam Chafin, Sue England, Allison Jordan, Robert Day, Sully Jugar, and Taylor Melvin. You can find us on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to like, share, and subscribe to see more.